Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I told you and I lied. I told you and I didn't believe. But here we are.
And she's. Football will forever be a legend here at Tottenham. It's a massive club. Everything I do is for the long term.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I say.
Here's Lucas Moura.
Oh, they've done it. The wait for silverware is over.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Tottenham Way. I'm Tom Barkley of The Sun. I'm joined by Tom Ornott of The Times and George Sessions of PA. We've just watched Spurs have a dream start, a perfect start, as Thomas Frank put it, to their Premier League campaign, beating Burnley 3-0. We're still in the bowels of the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium at the moment. And there's really only one place to start. Richarlison, the man who was given the chance to lead the line with Dominic Solanke still recovering from that ankle knock, was fantastic. Scored 2 goals, and the second goal in particular was breathtaking. Tom, what did you make? Let's start off with the goal, the second goal in particular. Apparently there were 17 touches or involved in the goal. All players touched the ball on the Spurs side in the lead up to it. And the finish was, well, what we've said Richarlison is capable of. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was a great goal. Really great goal. I mean, just athletically to be able to get his body in that kind of position. But the build up as well. I mean, you know, the lovely sort of, It was a little flick and turn, wasn't it, by Kudus, and the kind of change of pace. Great cross. It was a real sort of feel-good goal, I think. You know, that kind of opening day of the season vibe where everyone wants to see the new signings play well, you want to see a big win, and you want to see a great goal. And to be honest, you know, Spurs fans got all of that today. I mean, I thought Richarlison was... He delivered the kind of performance that I think everyone wants to see from Richarlison, like every week, you know, where you have the kind of fight and the tenacity. We saw a lot of kind of... chasing back, winning the ball in midfield, but also bringing other people into play. And then also just, you know, the finishing, you know, both goals, I thought were really good. Frank really praised him afterwards in the press conference, didn't he? And kind of said how the dream scenario is for to have two really good strikers this season. You know, ideally we play 60 games because we go far in all the competitions. We have two strikers really pushing each other. And I actually thought you could kind of see that when Solanke came on, you know, in the last kind of whatever it was, 15, 20 minutes, Solanke looked like he sort of already had a bit of a point to prove, you know, and I think that's really healthy because, you know, Solanke had a good season last season, but I think he can do even better and he needs to because, you know, Spurs are going to be maybe a little bit short of goals this season, a bit short of creativity. So to have someone like Richarlison, if possible, you know, playing well, scoring, putting a bit of pressure on him, I think it would be absolutely ideal.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You could tell last season it wasn't just a lack of competition, perhaps on Solanke. He was just looked knackered a lot of the time because he was having to play so many minutes and obviously got injured himself. And Ange, you know, to be fair, had said at the start of last season how he wanted the two of them vying for that one place. And sadly, it didn't really happen enough because of injuries to Richarlison. But it wasn't just his finishing today, George. I thought his hold up play was fantastic, and particularly in the lead up to Brennan Johnson's goal as well. Well, from watching that performance, can you understand why Spurs don't seem to be in the market for another centre-forward and they seem to look like they want to rely on Solanke, Richarlison, and then obviously Matisse Tel can play up there as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's crazy, really, because Richarlison's got 2 years left and I think if a big offer come in this summer, he probably would have gone. But now, after the performance against PSG as well, he seems the first choice, you know, out of him and Dominic Solanke. So he's made a brilliant start to the season. And I think he is a Thomas Frank player. You know, you could compare him to Ivan Toney. You know, very, very willing runner. You know, very good at holding the ball up. Better than Solanke, I'd say. And he just always, what kind of stands out with me is he always finds space in the box. We see him miss a lot of chances, but he always is on the end of chances. And I guess that has been the criticism of Dominic Solanke over the last 12 months. That he hasn't, you know, been found in the box or, you know, found the space in the box to take the chances. So, Richarlison's done brilliantly. Thomas Frank was kind of keen to point out a couple of times, he mentioned it on Friday and again today, that they have built him up this summer. Mm. He didn't play the first friendly of the season against Reading. His minutes do seem like they have been managed. He was gutted to come off today. He clearly wanted to stay on and try and get the hat trick. And we've seen that a couple of times with Richarlison when he's been on two goals at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And he's kind of had to haul himself off the pitch. But it's a brilliant kind of situation for Frank to now have that. Dominic Solanke, everyone assumed would be the main man this season, and Richarlison would be coming in and out. And it's the script's been flipped already, so it's a good problem to have. And yeah, I don't think a number nine is what Spurs need. I think we all know what Spurs need. It's not a number one, not a number nine. It's a plus one.
It was interesting that Frank, I thought, said, when I came in, I really liked him. I think he was probably in that situation where he sort of knew that if a big offer came in, the club would take it, and maybe they'd have to go and find someone else, or maybe they rely on Tell. But I think you're right, George. I think Frank would have looked at that and been like, actually, I'd be really happy to have Richarlison there as my second option, as a sort of first rotation for Solanke. And I like the way Frank talks about this. He sort of said it in a similar way with Van de Ven the other day, where he sort of looks at the player in totality, and you ask him, okay, can Solanke be a sort of, push Solanke, sorry, can Richarlison push Solanke this season? And he says, yeah, but we want to build layers into him. We want to work on his game. We want to try and work out why he didn't play consistently every week last season. What was it about the injuries? Like, what is it about his rhythm? And you can tell already, Frank sort of, he looks at things in a kind of really wholesome kind of way. I don't know if that's quite the right word, but sort of,
Holistic.
yeah, he wants to kind of find out exactly all the things that went wrong last season and trying to get into it. It's not just about, here's a good player, let's get him on the pitch and hope for the best. He sort of understands. And I think that's why it's a small example, but I think it's why that he is going to need time. There have been a few things where we've asked him in press conferences, and it's almost like, yeah, I need to get to that. Like, it's sort of on my list, like I'm still thinking about it. Like, we need to work through that as a coaching staff and a team. And I think he realizes that someone like Richarlison, there's so many layers to him as a player and as a person, that to get him fit and running, like, they need to make sure they get it all right.
But I would argue, though, to be fair, that it's almost like a bonus, really, at this stage with Richarlison, given his history with injuries, that is the only way to approach him at this point in his career. So whilst I agree that it's a commendable way of approaching him and other players with all these sort of history of injuries from Thomas Frank's point of view, and hopefully that'll be the key to keeping him fit. And he's already hinted at, he's thinking, he's always suggested in the press conference afterwards that there'll be games this season where he'll just take him out of the firing line to give him the best chance of staying fit. But from a Spurs fan point of view, I mean, where are the expectation levels on Richarlison? Today was a lovely performance, but I don't think many people are relying on him anymore because they just can't bear the thought of having to put all their eggs into his basket because that you can't rely on his fitness. So I see your point, but I also feel like that's the only thing you really could do at this stage of his
The
particular.
only thing I would say is last summer, Richarlison, credit for him, he didn't have a pre-season, did he? He had that operation at the end of the season before, missed the whole pre-season. That is, for any footballer, that is so crucial to get that body of fitness into him. And then they're away, and he obviously come back, and then he got injured a couple of weeks later. Now, this summer, he has had the pre-season. The other big factor for Richarlison is it's a World Cup year. And he loves Brazil. He does perform for Brazil, in fairness. He was arguably one of their players, at the 2022 World Cup. So he sees himself, his dream is to be Brazil's number nine. So that's going to drive him on this season. And I think it's going to be only going to be a positive thing for Spurs.
I think it's important to, say that after one game against Burnley, we're not expecting Richarlison to play kind of, 35 games and to score 20 goals. But I think what would be invaluable for Spurs, exactly what you said, Tom, like just to take the heat off Solanke a little bit, just to know maybe that every 3 or 4 games you can take Solanke out and put Richarlison in, and you can trust him. I don't think Ange ever really felt like he could trust Richarlison. He was sort of putting him in and hoping for the best, hoping you get one of those kind of golden days like today. But if they can actually have a player where they have a really good rotation in the Champions League, in the Premier League, however that works, who plays which, whatever. And equally within games like today, one plays an hour, the other one comes on for 30 minutes. If they can get that Richarlison that's kind of fit enough and focused enough to kind of be that first change, then I think that'll be a big plus for Spurs.
I agree. Obviously, both goals were set up by Mohamed Kudus, who throughout pre-season has really caught the eye with a number of attributes, most notably his power. It's so difficult to knock off the ball, but also his technical ability, his skill of holding onto the ball and creating chances. You already alluded to it in the lead up to his second goal, where he dropped the shoulder and got the space, delivered a lovely cross, albeit it was mainly about the finish rather than the cross. Again, he just really caught the eye. And look, As you just said, it's Burnley at home. It's the first game of the season. Even Thomas Frank has talked about this in the lead up to this season. Like, let's wait till it gets, colder in the season and maybe results aren't going quite as well and injuries are starting to kick in. Let's see where they're at, at that point. And obviously, Kudus is looking to make a good impression, having only just joined the club. But I've been really impressed so far. And I really like that combination at the moment with him and Porro down the right. I think there were times today when I wasn't quite sure about Spence and Johnson. Maybe they're both right footers, although second half brought Johnson was much better. We'll come on to that in a second. But the balance of Porro's creativity, his delivery, obviously on the right foot, and then Kudus cutting in, I think is a really nice balance. And already that right side seems to be locked up. And I know that's getting a bit ahead of ourselves. But what has really caught your eye when it comes to Kudus?
I think Kudus is obviously brilliant on the ball, and we've seen a lot of magic from him already. But actually, I think defensively, he's kind of surprised me. I remember, must have been last season when he didn't have a great time at West Ham. It seemed like one of the issues for the managers at West Ham was that he, off the ball work wasn't great. And with one scenario today, he went storming back and won the ball in the corner, in front of the south stand, and they went. The sort of cheer for that kind of tracking back was almost as loud as, when he did a bit of skill on the other side in the second half as well, which was fantastic. So I think that's very, that's very Thomas Frank. He's not going to allow anyone to get away with not doing the running, and not tracking back. And also Porro is going to benefit from having somebody a little bit more technically outstanding. I really like Johnson. I think there's a lot of qualities about him, but we all know he's not fantastic on the ball. He's fantastic being in, arriving in that position, taking the finishes, maybe first time crosses. Porro can now give Kudus the ball. Kudus can cut inside. It just creates avenues, I think, for Porro, And we saw some of the balls he put in today, which he always does, but he just had a little bit more time and space to do it. So that's a lovely partnership developing. And Kudus really only put in two or three crosses today, and he got two assists. So it's if he can do that a bit more, then he's going to get loads of assists this season.
Yeah, I think when he signed, there was a lot of talk about his dribbling stats and how that he can bring that to the team. And I think in my mind, you think of that, you think of devastating runs past the, through the opposing team to create chances. And it seems like he can do that. But in a way, it's his ability to retain possession and keep hold of the ball and allow a breather for his teammates or them, the whole team to push up, which seems to be even more, not more useful, but something we might see a bit more frequent in games that I think is a real asset to help the rest of the team. I mean, is there anything you want to add about Kudus, or do you want to move on to? I think we should mention Tell and we should mention Johnson, but let me know what you
No,
think.
I think that's a really good point on getting up the pitch. It's something that Kulusevski really brings to the team, and with him not there, it's really important to have that. I think just, we saw obviously in the middle of the week that he played more centrally, kind of behind Richarlison, and then today he's playing much more out on the right. And he did come in centrally, but I was almost struck by how disciplined he was, really, with kind of keeping the width out on the right. I guess with Johnson coming in from the left, they needed him almost to hug the touchline a bit. But that versatility is kind of, Frank said it, hasn't he? Like we're all sort of wondering, oh, why is he signing this player when they've already got this? And but actually having players who can play in multiple positions, we've seen literally in the first two games, why that is beneficial. You can play a certain system against PSG, you can play a certain system at home to Burnley, and the same player can do two different jobs, and having that skill set will be really important. I think Kudus is had a really bright start, hasn't he? I like the way George sort of, he's had a sparkling debut, made an assist, brilliant skills, and he immediately sort of focusing on the discipline and then kind of chasing back. This is very Frank era, George,
I like that.
But that you like those little moments are also important, because I think if we're sort of talking about moving on from the sort of Ange era and the kind of Frank team being more sensible and being more smart, having someone like Kudus who does just bring that little bit of pizzazz and a bit of magic, those kind of little touches where everyone goes, that was completely pointless, but we really enjoyed it because it was a brilliant skill. Like that's valuable. People come here obviously at Spurs to be entertained, and he definitely does that.
I agree. Just briefly on Matisse Thiel, because he didn't play that much today. I just wanted to sort of point out for anyone who didn't see the game, there was a nice moment in the first half when he went to warm up, and there was a huge round of applause from the fans who saw him, obviously showing their support after the disgusting and disgraceful racist abuse he suffered after missing the penalty against Paris Saint-Germain. So that was a touching moment. The fans, rallying around their player. Brennan Johnson, though, I think is a bit more of a talking point, perhaps. Like, throughout this pre-season, in the ones we've done together, George, I've sort of aired my skepticism over how I feel he's going to fit in off the left, with the caveat that it's early days, he's changing things. And if I just only watched the first half today, that sort of opinion would have only become even more entrenched, I suppose. But second half, he looked a bit of a different player. I don't know if, Frank had sort of spoken to him at half time and given him some motivation or particular advice on how to make the most of it. But he obviously scored the goal. It was a clinical finish, and I feel like that goal was important, even which sounds strange because he was the top scorer last year. He's the Europa League hero for scoring the goal. But because of the new signings and wondering where he's going to fit in, just establishing his importance to the squad and the team through that goal felt quite significant. But actually, it wasn't just that. I thought he was far less of a peripheral figure in the second half. Again, Burnley at home, got to take that as a factor in this match. And it was the second half where they're starting to tire. But perhaps there were signs of him starting to adapt a bit to that left side position that we saw in the second half. What do you reckon, John?
Yeah, I was never a huge fan of him on the left under Ange. Ange's first season, he tried that a couple of times, and I think maybe Arsenal away did well. But other than that, it just didn't really suit him. And I think this was a big day for Brendan Johnson because he didn't play a minute on Wednesday in the Super Cup. Me and Marcus discussed that afterwards. I then put it to Thomas Frank, and he kind of just said it was to do with shape and he preferred Matty Taylor. And I think if I was Brendan Johnson hearing that, I would have been slightly concerned because, it's a really, really big occasion for Spurs. He's the guy that scored the goal in Bilbao, and he wasn't even given a look in. And yeah, first half he didn't have a huge amount of the ball. I didn't think Spurs actually were that good in the first half. I thought they started well for sort of 20 minutes. Obviously got the goal, and then actually they let Burnley into it, and that midfield three kind of wasn't quite working. Romero was actually a little bit rash as well. But second half, that was a big moment for Johnson, and I was kind of struck actually by how confidently he finished that. I know he scored a lot of goals last season, but they were kind of often balls to the back post and he's kind of slamming it home. That one, he really had to think about it. He had to bring the ball forward. He sort of drew the goalkeeper out, poked it past him. What was kind of the kind of finish of a forward, really, if we're being totally honest. And I've always kind of had this inkling and just feeling that Brendan Johnson would be good as a second striker, especially if Matty Taylor's not going to be quite at the level. So that was a really big moment for him. And there were other. He set up a good chance for Richarlison going on the outside and cutting back with his left. He cut inside a few times and crossed him with his right. So there was a lot of encouraging moments for Johnson. And he would have been disappointed not to play on Wednesday night. So he needed a performance. And Spurs now go away to Man City next week with Thomas Frank a lot to think about.
Yeah, I do wonder, like you say, where he might play second striker at times, if he does tweak the formation. But we'll wait to see on that one. Tom, we'll talk about the midfield. First of all, no Yves Bissouma, which was a surprise because we know that he got dropped from the squad against Paris Saint-Germain as a punishment for persistent lateness. But Thomas Frank had said that he was going to be back in the fold, back in the squad. He's just told us in the press conference that he picked up an injury, and that's why he missed out. I still wonder if we're still going
In
to.
training, the injury, wasn't it?
In
So,
training, I think, yeah,
yes,
if we can go.
he said yesterday,
Yes.
or what we say Saturday. So, in training on Friday, right?
Right.
The press conference was before training as well, so that
Oh,
does kind of
that makes
marry up
sense. It makes sense.
previous.
I'm not questioning whether it's, about anything about that down that line. I was just more teeing up why he wasn't playing. I still am skeptical whether he'll still be here come, September, but we'll see. But the midfield he picked was very youthful, very, very young. Two teenagers, Bergvall and Gray, come in to join Saar, who's only 22. Bentancur, surprisingly, bench, I presume because of, presumably because of fitness, because he's just played a game the other day, but it's just quite rare that happens. And obviously Paulinho came out as well, less of a surprise perhaps because he's only just signed and he's building up his minutes. But I thought Archie Gray in particular at number six was quite encouraging, his performance. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I thought he was good. I also think it's fair to say that in this kind of game, it's a nice game to play in that position. Like, I think you have a lot of the ball. Burnley weren't pressing particularly high. Like, it's quite a nice game to kind of get the ball, recycle it, move it left to right. But I think he did that job well. He was tidy. Don't really remember him giving the ball very much away very much. I haven't seen the stats, but I suspect it was pretty good. And he looked pretty comfortable there. And I think even more significant really is that Frank played him there and gave him the kind of the trust to play in what was a really important position. I think the idea was when Frank wanted to sign Gray for Brentford was it sort of initially they were going to play him as like an eight, like a box to box, but that long term they had very much the idea of making him into a six. So whether he thinks, he's matured enough to sort of take on that position, almost straight off the bat here, this season, let's see. But I thought it was a good performance from Gray. I thought the midfield generally worked pretty well. I don't think it was spectacular from any of them, but I think it worked well. And what struck me more than anything, I think, is that we didn't see so many of the occasions where Burnley kind of sprang forward and there was nobody there, which we had quite a lot last season watching Spurs, where sometimes it just felt like there wasn't a midfield, that everyone had kind of bombed on and was on the edge of the penalty box, and then one pass, bang, bang, and the other team is kind of, sprawling away and has a 3v2 or something. You saw, I mean, even I remember, Van de Ven in the second half did that kind of resurging run down the left, right? And I think there were times when that happened under Ange and the team was just kind of all over the place and just kind of hoping for the best. It was like, oh, Van de Ven's gone on a run. Let's all just kind of, hope they don't get the ball. Today, everyone else was in the right position. There was a shape, a structure. The midfield seemed to be so much more compact, I thought. It wasn't perfect. There were times when Burnley, sprang the trap and raced away on the break, particularly George Wright in that period at the end of the first half. And I think better teams with better strikers and wingers with more precise in that position would have punished Spurs. So there's definitely a work in progress there. But it just felt a lot more balanced. I really felt that midfield did feel more balanced. And that is, I think, quite impressive given, as you say, the personnel, because then they brought on Palhinha, they can bring on Bentancur, who are, I think, the more defensively conscientious of those of that group. So I think it bodes well in terms of the kind of structure and solidity of the team overall.
Yeah, I feel like it was quite a bold call to play Gray in that position. And I do wonder if we might see more of that from Thomas Frank this season, almost classic horses for courses, like the way he went out to PSG, mixing it up. I think we were expecting tactical formation tweaks, and probably the same thing will happen at Man City. But also, not just formation and tactical tweaks, personnel as well. He might have looked at this game and thought, it's Burnley at home. This is about as, even though they're going to be up for it, having just been promoted, this is really, if you're going to give him a chance at number six, this is the kind of game you're going to do it, where you're going to dominate possession. And I think he did pretty well. I thought Bergvall as well caught the eye. I mean, whenever he gets going with the when he's dribbling the ball, there was one particular run where he just sort of battled off a few of the other midfielders, and he's so graceful when he's in full flight, just catches the eye. And I thought he was pretty good. Also, I noticed without Kevin Danzo in the team, he was the man who was given the long throw duties, which he got some decent distance, if not amazing power, and Burnley dealt with it quite well. But do you think
Bit
that's out
flighty, wasn't it? A bit
bit
of
perhaps?
the first few were there. What there was one in the second half that caused some problems. That was a pretty cool. I mean, that midfield three. How young are those three guys? And that could easily be Tottenham's midfield three for another 10 years if they all develop as the club clearly hopes. It was a bold call. I think, if Yves Bissouma is available and hadn't done, what he has done this summer, would he be in that midfield instead of Archie Gray? Who knows? It's kind of, could be a sliding doors moment for Archie Gray where. João Palhinha comes in. We all kind of wonder how many minutes he's going to get, and then all of a sudden, Bissouma does what Bissouma does, and now Archie's, perhaps going to be the number two, number six, which would be great for him because that is where clearly everyone sees him long term, and the only way he's going to, be able to do that is to play minutes in that position. And Tommy's right; it is Burnley at home, and I think in the first half he wasn't, brilliant, but he definitely grew into the game. And just looked a lot more assured, I felt, as the game wore on. And there was a nice moment when he got substituted. Thomas Frank was giving him a big sort of pat on the chest and a little kind of pep talk as they walked off the pitch. And I think, that would have given him a lot of confidence. And also the fact he come on, ahead of Bergvall on Wednesday night. So that's, a lot of kind of, positives there, for Frank to get minutes into those guys and to show them that I trust you in the Premier League. And I guess Pape Sarr was the elder statesman, and he looks a different player already this season. It is early days, of course, but if you add in the pre-season games, he just seems to kind of, I don't know, matured, I guess, over the last 6 months, it feels like. And maybe a player we weren't sure where he would fit in going forward now seems the first name on the team sheet for Thomas Frank when it comes to midfield.
And Tom, you were talking about the tactical discipline, perhaps, comparing it to Van de Ven, racing up the left under the Ange era, and at times the team being a little bit exposed, whereas today the players were a little bit more tactically secure in their positioning. I wonder what else you sort of noticed from today's performance that really struck a notable difference under the Postecoglou era. One thing that Ange was always criticised for, not so much about the way his team played, but but by Marcus in particular and a lot of fans, and understandably so, to be fair, was his alleged sort of passivity, being quite passive on the touchline, looking like he's not really influencing things, which at times I felt was unfair. But there are also times when you sort of got where people were coming from. A lot of that's down to, if they're watching on TV, how often it, you know, the camera pans to him. But there were times when perhaps he could have been a bit more animated. It's just his style. Watching Frank today, there were quite a few moments, and throughout preseason, where he's definitely not going to be like that. He can be sort of straight into the. He's not like on the touchline all the time. He sometimes sits back and sort of watches and assesses. But there are times when he's very much instructing players, which I don't know. Who knows whether there's actually that much difference between that and Ange's alleged approach when it comes to giving instructions to players. I think it definitely goes down better with fans who are watching on, you know, expecting something to happen. But first of all, on that, what did you notice, and just anything else from today's performance that looked quite different?
Yeah, he's quite like a big fan of the sort of Pep Guardiola like demonstrative spring out of the seats, isn't he? Like when something needs to be said, he likes to sort of spring out really quickly as if it's really important. And then equally, sometimes he does that in reverse, where he's really frustrated and he turns around and like returns to his seat really quickly with his arms like outstretched, like shouting at coaching staff or something, isn't he? Like saying, "I told you that was what you should have done." I think with the players, I'm not sure it makes that much difference, but I actually do think at home in front of the fans, I think the crowd will look at the coach a lot to sort of say, to see what the body language is, to see what they're thinking, what they're doing, who they're talking to. And I think when they see someone like Frank with that kind of energy, I think it does make a difference. You know, I think it does kind of give everyone a bit of a lift to see a coach who is dynamic like that and with energy. I'm not going to be revisionist about it. I don't think the players necessarily, it makes a massive impact in terms of, I don't think Ange not, you know, shouting the players loads necessarily affects the team so much, but I do think it affects the kind of mood in the ground. And we know that Frank is like that, right? From the touchline, we know he's going to be like that all season. And I quite like it as a journalist. I quite like looking down and seeing what he's doing. And was always just kind of like arms folded in his suit, and there was nothing to see there. Whereas Frank, you can really get a sense of what he's thinking and what's going wrong. I think in terms of the team, like overall, I quite like Frank's sort of summary. It wasn't a through the roof performance, he said. It was a good performance, and I think that is probably a fair summary. I would probably say it was kind of a 7 out of 10, too harsh. Maybe give it an 8 because it's a 3-0. And I take the Burnley thing. I also think, let's not get carried away, Spurs lost to Ipswich last season. They lost to Leicester. They lost a lot of these kind of games last season where we thought they would come here and win easily, and they didn't. So to get a clean sheet and to win like they did, new signings playing well, I think you know you have to be happy with that. You know, I think they and also like I think what we've seen from this and the PSG game back to back, I think has been really interesting to sort of see the approach of Frank playing a really top team away from home, as it were, and then seeing them play against Burnley at home to see how he would deal with that. I think it's one of the big questions of the kind of Frank era, isn't it? Is not so much how he plays against the big team, because we know that Brentford were great at that, and I think we know that Frank, with all his kind of analytical qualities, will come up with good plans against the best teams. But can they break down teams like Burnley at home, where they're really expected to win, to be on the front foot? Can Spurs still play with zip and sort of dynamism against teams that play low block? And I thought today it's an early test. Okay, it's a test we were expecting them to pass, I think, but I think they passed it with pretty flying colours. So it's a good start. You know, I always think once you've got the win like this, people look back and say, "Oh yeah, easy win." But before the game, I bet there are lots of Spurs fans who are coming here thinking, "Oh, that's an awkward one." You know, first match up. Then we've got Man City away. We're gonna have to go there. You know, with a draw here. And then we've got to play City away. Then we've got West Ham, Bournemouth. You know, people look at it pessimistically until you get the result that's so-called easy. They got the win. They're off to a great start. And I think it's just important to get those good vibes going early on.
Yeah, I mean, totally valid point, but also a valid point that Spurs in recent years always seem to make good starts to the season, or at least good starts to the season under new managers. And, you know, it's obviously a long way to go from here. I mean, you talk about how we can expect Thomas to be quite demonstrative and quite not theatrical, but you can maybe see what he's feeling a bit more from the way he acts on the touchline. I think another thing we're going to have to quite quickly get used to is the way he shuts down any talk about transfers in press conferences. I mean, most managers do. I mean, I've been through so many Graham Potter press conferences when I used to cover Brighton to know that, you know, you'll never get anything out of him. I think Ange at times did just often give you a little bit, didn't he? A little tidbit for the journalists that maybe we sort of overblew, or maybe that he knew exactly what he was doing. But there were times when you thought, "Oh, that's great. I wasn't expecting that." So this is probably more, you know, reverting to the norm, to be honest, isn't it? But I'm obviously obviously teeing up your question in the press. Well, in fact, we both asked questions, didn't we? But you specifically asked about Eberechi Eze, the man on everyone's lips at the moment. I'm of the understanding that the player is expecting, and you might well be listening to this after the game tomorrow, so you can work out whether I was right or not. But I'm of the understanding that he's expecting not to be involved against Chelsea for Crystal Palace on Sunday. It does feel like Spurs are really pushing for this transfer, which is really good news. I mean, anyone who hasn't listened to the pod we did the other day, we waxed lyric about why we felt Eze was the perfect signing, why he's right there, why he can bring that creativity, but also has that experience and can play on the left if they need someone out there. But from what you've seen today, they obviously won 3-0. Does it feel like they need that number 10 as much as they did before the game, George?
Yeah, 100%. It helps when you score against a newly promoted team after 10 minutes, because then obviously they have to come out. If Richarlison doesn't score that goal and it kind of stays 0-0, it's maybe a very different game. And Spurs are going to play, and Thomas Frank is going to have to get used to teams that have men behind the ball, play a low block, and there's no Maddison for potentially the whole season. Kulusevski's out for a long time. Kudos can play as the number 10, but he's doing so well out on the right. Why change that? So, yeah, Eze is made for Spurs, and I think this team is ready for that type of player. Thomas Frank obviously did want Morgan Gibbs-White, and maybe that's a conversation for, hopefully if Eze does happen. But I think, today wouldn't have changed anything. I guess a key change over the last, we're recording Saturday night. Over the last 24 hours, is Eze's release clause has now expired. Now, I personally think that only benefits Spurs. It sounded like it was in the 68 million region. Friday night, that expired. Crystal Palace can no longer be waiting around for a 68 million bid. So it's going to, you would presume it's going to be lower. He's only got 2 years left on his deal. And as you say, yourself, Tom, sounds like he's not going to play against Chelsea. If he's not going to play against Chelsea, we know kind of what direction this is traveling in. So this should all be good news for Spurs. And I think for them, bear in mind this summer they have lost Son Heung-min. They need a real big name. England international, so recognisable, key in Crystal Palace's FA Cup win. If you're going to spend a lot of money, you're going to maybe make a record signing. I think personally he is the guy to go for. He could have been here 6 years ago or 5 years ago. David Pleat, one of famously is one of his players he scouted, told Spurs to sign when he was at QPR, and they didn't. So they're going to play a lot more for him now than they might have done a few years ago. But if this can happen, I think it's going to be a great bit of business for Spurs. And today shouldn't have changed anything. It was a very good performance, but Spurs didn't really create a huge amount of chances. They won 3-0. I'd imagine they probably had five, maybe six shots on target. There'll be other games against better opposition where they'll need someone to break a team down, and he will be brilliant. And already the thought of him linking with Kudos is an exciting thought as well. They could be fantastic together.
Yeah, you say famously, I actually didn't know he was one of Pleatley's targets, to be fair.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear. I mean, final word for you, Tom, seeing as we've already spoken our thoughts about Eze, what you think he will bring to the team if he signs. And also Savinho, I mean, I don't know if you follow him much when you were out in Spain, when he was at Girona, might have been not sure the crossover there, but they've obviously got a lot of wingers already. Is he just, if it is Savinho, they do manage to get him over the line, is it just the fact that he's so good, it's an opportunity that they just have to take?
I think there's a bit of a sort of market opportunity there. We know Spurs like that when something comes up, they often like to kind of grab it. And he ticks a lot of Tottenham's boxes in terms of his kind of age, versatility, speed. You know that they were looking for kind of like dynamic players who cover the ground quickly, ball carrying ability. There's definitely a lot of upside with Savinho, right? I mean, you talk to people at City, and this is. People talk about it with a lot of kind of potential. I think some people wonder if he'll fulfill it or not, and maybe City kind of think, well, if it's going to be a big offer, 60 million, or they're looking kind of 70 odd, then maybe they would take that. But I can see why Spurs are looking at him. I think Eze is, obviously the more sure thing, right? And I think even today you could see that Spurs have got quite a lot of, they've got more invention on the wings, but I think going through the middle still, it looks a little bit, can be a bit kind of pedestrian, a bit functional almost. And I think that having Eze with a little bit more kind of central magic, weaving through those tight spaces, changing the angle of attack sometimes, where he just kind of beats someone unexpectedly, and then the opposition are kind of put off balance. I think that kind of thing would make a big difference to Spurs. So Yeah, let's see. Fingers crossed. I'm always slightly more pessimistic about these things. I know how long they can take with Spurs, and the relationship between Spurs and Palace, let's say, has been slightly strained at times. So let's see how the negotiations go. But yeah, it'd be definitely be a really important addition and a big one for the fans as well. I mean, I just wonder what you guys thought about today in terms of kind of thrill factor, because I think it was obviously a great win. I think they played well, didn't they? I mean, did people's fears about sort of is the Frank team going to be as fun as kind of the Ange team? Did you think it was as good to watch as well as kind of a good victory as well, Thomas?
I think if there are fears about that today's performance won't have changed that much of that. There were little moments you alluded to him earlier with Kudus and his ability to get bums off seats with his amazing little bits of skill here and there. And obviously there was a fantastic goal from Richarlison, but you can't be banking on that every week. It was decent fare as a neutral. I enjoyed it. I found it interesting, but I guess I got my Tottenham hat on as well. I'm looking at all different bits. I mean, from a sort of how aesthetically pleasing it was, I don't know. But right now, a clean sheet, 3 goals after 22 defeats last season, I mean, there can be no objections at this point. Would
I think
you agree?
it's just wins at the minute, isn't it? I don't think there's a huge kind of eagerness for everyone to see kind of free-flowing football. I think fans after last season in the Premier League in particular, they just want to see Premier League wins and go a few months down the line. And if injuries are piling up and the grind of Europe and Premier League is kind of taking its toll and Frank's in a sticky moment, then maybe that's when people unfortunately will talk about the style if it isn't working. But I think for the first couple of months it's all going to be about wins. And I guess the big thing with Thomas Frank is adaptability, isn't it? And we've already seen it, 2 games in the space of 4 days, and he's played two different formations, tried different personnel in different positions. And I think that's what people will be looking for early on. And yeah, I think today was, as he said himself, it is a perfect start. 3-0, 3 goals, 3 points. Happy days.
I agree. Obviously, there's all this talk about new players coming in, but today it felt like one of the older players, Richarlison, it was his day, wasn't it? A couple of fantastic goals, particularly the second one. We'll wait to see what happens this week. If there's any new business coming in, hopefully we'll do a pod in the week with Marcus, and hopefully do lots more this season. But thanks for listening. Cheers, guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.